Welcome to Idle Red Hands Weekly. I'm Jeremy.
I'm Chris.
And what is Idle Red Hands Weekly? It is produced by mixing a range of color materials on the fly, allowing for full, vivid CMYK prints with beautiful gradients and detail. This technology employs dissolvable support materials, removing the need for support sprues and allowing for smoother, more consistent surfaces than ever before. This plastic is similar in durability to our premium plastic material. Faint layer lines may be visible on the surface of the figures, especially in strong, direct sunlight.
I know what this is now. I always look forward to these intros because I don't know what they're going to be, and I'm trying to figure out what they're from. The full color Hero 4 3D printed model stuff.
Exactly.
When you started out CMYK, I'm like, oh, cool printing. I like that. That's cool. And you went layer gradients in the plastic. I'm like, know what this is. Yep, gotcha.
Nice. Yeah, so we can jump right to Kickstarters. HeroForge 2.0 is getting funded. I messed around with this a little bit in its original iteration, and I still am not quite sure. It's still that kind of vanity thing for people that make a D&D character, get obsessed with it, and want a miniature exactly of what they want.
Hey, as someone who wrote Mucker Fiction about a character, I cannot complain about it. The vanity stuff, though I get what you're saying.
It's I think the nicest thing about it is I've heard, you know, DMs say, oh, I gave a gift to all my players of a miniature of their characters, especially if you have a long-running campaign. Yeah, I think that's very touching, and that's a nice way to kind of connect the group together.
I agree.
But I think there are also people that just do it because, oh, I am so obsessed with this tiefling that I must, you know, I must see her in all her glory.
Yeah. As soon as you said tiefling, I was like, oh, it's going to be a chick. And then I was like, adjust that boob slider all the way to 100%. Right. Yeah, gotcha.
When I played around with it last time, the interface is kind of halfway between like a character creation for a video game and poser, you know, like a 3D, default 3D model thing.
Yep.
So you've got some options and they said they're adding tons and tons of variability and options, and you've got poses, and you know, you put things, clothing and objects and accessories on your character, and then you can also change the pose and everything conforms with the changes. So the thing they're doing now is color, and you have basically a paint kind of app. So you bring a gray 3D model in, and you paint all the surfaces. So you can get those kind of colors, and they have the technology now where I guess they're doing a layer of that representing that color, and it's kind of clear. People said it looks a little fuzzy. It's not.
I mean the actual 3D model.
The prototypes. They haven't said like this is the final print.
Right,
but they sent maybe like less than half a dozen out to different YouTubers, and they've shown people their kind of default model. And it's nice, and it's definitely a step forward. And for people that don't want to paint, don't want to assemble a mini, it's a good option.
I've got a better one, but continue.
The funny thing about the Kickstarter is they're like, this is our new technology. Mm-hmm. This is the hottest thing. You know, this is what you want. But if you don't want that, you can get one to paint.
Okay.
And if you don't want that, you can take this 3D character that you create and create a token or some sort of graphic that can be used in Roll20 or some of the other. And if you don't want that, then you can take a screenshot. They have like a photo booth app where you can take an image and put that on your character sheet. Huh. So they're trying to cover like every possibility of how someone would want to represent their character.
I guess it makes sense, but I was expecting here's the object file for you to print yourself if you wanted.
I missed that one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And the STLs are available as well. So you can purchase, instead of having a print of it, you can purchase the STL file to print it yourself.
Right. Okay.
I mean, depending on what pose you do and everything, you may have some, you know, crazy supports yourself that you have to build to actually make that a printable file.
Well, yeah, as you said, I guess they're covering all their bases in case if you don't want that. One way to look at it is getting support from people who don't want that and so wouldn't normally support. Mm. I mean, I back hopefully fewer Kickstarters than in the past. And there's always the option, especially recently, to support the project without expecting a reward just because you like it.
Right.
And I think that's a great idea. And I'm talking about like itch.io and how I always kick like a couple bucks extra to like the creators just because itch makes that so easy. Why would you not?
Right.
So I think that's kind of Kickstarter's way of doing it. But, and this sounds real selfish, with Kickstarter, I still kind of want to get something for the money I'm donating.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to kind of break myself of that habit. But back to the HeroForge 2.0 thing, I see those lesser tiers as a way to say, thank you for supporting our Kickstarter. Here is something for doing that, rather than just saying, we want your money and kind of giving people nothing.
Yeah, that's true. So I'm curious how populous this will be. They're giving a lot of options. I mean, you can actually like print entire 100 minis if you really want to do an entire campaign.
How much that would cost? You'd probably get into like GW prices.
Yeah, they're I think it's $20 for just a plastic, and the plastic colored is it might be $39.99, something like that. So it's like $40. Painted.
And you're continuing this conversation by yourself because I'm dead at those prices. Yeah, all
right, anyway. Right. And they're using they have a partnership with Shapeways,
okay,
who has been doing 3D printing for a long time. But the thing I'm curious about, especially with, you know, they have to promise a deadline and when they're going to deliver, that's going to be a humongous burden on that company to actually produce. And especially if it's new materials and they're having some error, not getting exactly the results they want. Fulfillment for this Kickstarter is going to be a little rough because this company has, you know, years of experience right now. I think they've been around for a while. I just worry that like, oh, now we have to print, you know, 50,000 to fulfill our Kickstarter.
Not if they were smart, but I wonder if they decided to like limit the number, because you can, on a Kickstarter, you can limit the number of available slots for a specific tier. Mm-hmm. So not if they were smart, because hey, they might be able to handle the volume.
Right.
That's one way they could do it. Or break people into waves. Be like, okay, well, the first couple people the first X people to pledge, you're in time frame. Your next people are in that time frame. So is the Kickstarter for like to upgrade their technology?
Yes. Yeah. They're kind of basically, this is each of the goals are giving you like, oh, now you can do scars and now you can do.
No, I forgot. That giant eye roll kind of thing didn't translate to radio, but yeah.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, now we're adding tattoo functionality. So it's just little options that they want to include in the editor itself. They're also promoting it as, well, if you are a painter, create these miniatures, purchase the miniatures, and then continue to use our editor to choose, you know, color palette or color schemes. And, you know, so the color thing, you're still going to use the color thing, even if you don't want to print it.
I guess so. I mean, I'm not saying you're wrong, but fair enough.
Side.
Okay.
Yeah. But the funny thing is, this thing, this kind of weird vanity miniature thing, has been around for a while, because I remember back in the day, which maybe like 10 years ago.
Back in my day, we had to like kit bash things.
Right. When World of Warcraft was in its peak, they had a partnership with a company called Figure Prints.
Okay.
And they use a kind of a weird powder. So they do like a powder cast and a cover in resin. They can basically reproduce those low poly models and all maps from World of Warcraft. You had to go in, you had to tell them where your character is, and they'd bring the character into the system. You'd have a few default poses, and then you'd order it, and they would send it. It was really expensive. I think it was like close to $100.
Whoa.
And they would send it to you like in a little glass dome, you know, like,
oh, okay, to okay, put on you your couldn't touch it, right?
But the funny thing about that is like WoW never stopped extending the level cap and the gear, you know, so you would like, oh, I'm so proud of this level 50 character that I have, and they've got all this epic gear. I'm spending $100 to print this, and then in 5 years you're like, oh, look at that loser level character. I'm 78 now, and this character. This has existed for a while, like the ability to do this. I guess so. $30-$40 sounds much more reasonable
than $100
compared to $100. Yeah, and something that you can't. So these are supposed to be durable enough, you know, to use on the tabletop. Yeah, yeah. And that was just like, it was basically a sand sculpture that if you you dropped it, it would probably just shatter. People's connection to their characters, because you see that there are just like, you know, subreddits and things of people just draw my character art, and a lot of illustrators you know, make their living on commissions of drawing people's characters because they like their style and they want to see their character.
I totally understand that. I mean, I've commissioned stuff from artists. I got like way back in the day, I got Alan to do some illustrations of fantasy characters for a Dungeon World game that I was going to run, and I just put them on business cards and then kind of laid them out on the table for the players to kind of, okay, pick your what character you want in illustration. So I totally get the character, the vanity character stuff. I totally get commissioning an artist. I kind of understand getting a Hero Forge figure. $30 to $40 is still a lot.
Yeah.
And as you said, these are nice gifts for like long running games of here's your character. But if you want like miniatures, paper miniatures, I think are just hands down the way more economical option. Mm-hmm. Like people like Printable Heroes or like Trash Mob Minis. I really like the style of those illustrations, and I would probably never use minis. I still support them on Patreon because their stuff looks so awesome. So that's a much more economical way to do it. And if a miniature gets lost or damaged or bent or whatever, or if your kid eats one, doesn't matter. You just print out a couple new copies and cut them out. So I like those.
Yeah. And storage is much more reasonable when you're talking about that. Yeah, Pathfinder and Starfinder seem to have really gone that way. I mean, people have produced actual 3D miniatures for them, but the pawns, Paizo is really obsessed with their pawns. They release sets of pawns.
And I kind of get why. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It definitely is a much more reasonable way to go about it. So that's happening. I think they're up to 1 million or 2 million, 2 million already. So hopefully that's going to pay for what they want to do with the system. Recently, there's been a little bit, and I don't want to name any names, but there's been a few Kickstarters where they have a pledge goal and that they want the money for that, but it's not enough to actually produce the project. So there have been some projects recently, board games, like miniature board games specifically, where they have, we've reached our goal. Actually, we're not at the real goal, we're canceling. Yeah.
Really?
So that's
but that means they lose the money.
Yes, yeah, that means they lose the money. But what they
did they were hoping for a lot more than they got.
Okay. Right, and they wanted to have that funded in 24 hours or funded in 60 seconds or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, gotcha.
You know, they wanted that kind of rep, but actually hoping that the momentum of the campaign would carry them through. But that's really dishonest and really tricky, and I think very. Showing kind of what Kickstarter is becoming. It's not a very transparent, we just need this, guys, and we're going to make this happen. Right. It's, it's just trying to scam.
Well, can you blame that on the platform, though, or on people kind of exploiting loopholes in the platform, which could be possibly closed up, but how would you do that without affecting other people? Because, I don't really get the appeal of that funded in 60 seconds or funded in 24 hours. I mean, I guess it looks good, and I am oftentimes more inclined to back something I wouldn't otherwise if it's already funded. It's always kind of disappointing when you're like, oh, I really like this thing and I want it to get funded, and then it kind of doesn't. But why would you not put your funding goal at what you need to produce the thing? I mean, you're just kind of asking for trouble that way, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I thought the idea of the campaign was to be pretty transparent, because a lot of people will just literally put the budget. We need this much for editing. We need this much for illustrations.
This much for Kickstarter fees. And
right. To not do that, it's a little tricky. And I think all the people, this kind of gold rush of this miniature board game thing, people are starting to realize that it's not. They can't get as much money yet. It's not an ever escalating thing. They're not going to make, now they're making 2 million. Now they're making 3 million per project. It's not going anywhere. And the field's getting very crowded. So got to try whatever you can.
Find something else.
So did you see the logo for the Dune movie leaked?
Like that.
Yes,
really like that. So I don't kind of get why people are making fun of it by moving the letters around.
Yeah,
and
right.
I'm kind of that looked awesome. I'm not mad at people. I just kind of why would you turn this awesome thing into crap and make fun of it?
Anyway. Yeah, the thin line looks very European sci-fi. But it's very similar. The Mass Paperback Penguin Dune series has everything except the N is pretty much identical to that. It's just a rotated kind of U. It's like a bend that they just rotate four different directions. But I like it, and it gives a very different feel. Like I was saying, it's always that Art Nouveau looking lettering that they've used in the past. And so I'm glad they're getting away from that and kind of telling you this is going to be this is going to be a new version. This is going to be a new aesthetic, and you haven't seen this before. But the company Warner Brothers, whatever the studio is, immediately someone took a cell phone photo of a video projection at some presentation, and they are actively doing takedown notices so people don't. I guess they're worried it's being spoiled, and maybe the reaction, like people making fun of it, made them it's just too early.
I guess, but I mean, not that I've seen The Mandalorian, and I'm kind of burnt out on Star Wars stuff. Mm-hmm. But wasn't Disney doing the same thing with the Baby Yoda memes? And it's kind of why? Would you do that when people are essentially giving you viral marketing?
Right. And they went after creators on Etsy pretty hard, anybody that was using Baby Yoda in their descriptions and things.
That I kind of understand. Because, I mean, there's a real gray area between selling fan-produced stuff, illustrations and work based on IP you don't own. As someone who has thought numerous times about making little games inspired by existing IPs, there's that gray area where you're I'm kind of taking the risk. So that I understand. I kind of don't understand the viral going after the viral marketing thing.
Right. And that's funny though, because they were delayed because they didn't want the toys or any merchandise to reveal the Baby Yoda character, the child. And so they delayed that until after Christmas, and the void was just filled by makers and creators.
Oh, really?
Online. Yeah, yeah. Just like, yeah, people did all kinds of knit and plush and every sort of thing. And especially like 3D printing, like there's so many STL files of Baby Yoda, so you can print your own, supplanting the Baby Groot models that were.
Yeah, thank goodness. Wow. Neither of those really appealing to me. So.
I hope that this doesn't mean they're feeling kind of insecure about this film. I hope there's some confidence that it's going to do well. But something that's giving me confidence is I saw the second. It's odd that they're doing this, but the Aeronautica Imperialis is continuing to get support.
Oh, nice.
And they're going to release a second box set. So the first box set was Orcs versus Imperial. Mm-hmm. The second box set is called Skies of Fire. Okay. And it's Imperial and
Chaos?
Tau.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Fire Warriors, oh, yeah, yes. Yeah, okay. Yeah, so they're going to do, so the Aircast, yeah, the Tau Empire Aircast. So the, and the models look great, and they've already done, like, they've already done this design. They've already done
Because there was a lot of Forge World stuff
for that. Yeah, so in resin, they've already done this, but they look great. I just don't understand the box set is kind of an incomplete experience, and if they're trying to get people into the hobby, it's odd. They're doing that box again when they already have all the support, but they are releasing a new campaign book and probably new maps and things to support all of this. And of course, new custom dice.
Of course.
but I'm happy to see that that's going to continue to get support because I like that game. And I love those models. Those models are gorgeous. So Skies of Fire is coming out, I think, April. Yeah. So we're going to get another reinforcement. So
we'll be playing that.
Yes, we definitely will.
Or the Lego version. Mobile Frame Zero Intercept Orbit.
Right. That's right. We didn't ever play ships.
I'm still trying to figure out how to build Lego Tyranid ships.
Yes.
It's going pretty like, Lord knows I've got enough like brown and beige plates and white like spiky teeth and stuff to make all kinds of, you know, like gribbly looking Tyranid ships, but I don't know how to do it on Lego Intercept Orbit scale.
Right.
Maybe just get that Lego model of the 3-in-1 that lets you build a squid and just put that down as like, you know, the giant hive ship. Like, yep, that's it. That's my capital ship. There you go.
Wow. So what have you been
Last Sunday, I ran kind of a last moment Chariot of the Gods session.
Nice.
The Kansai Japan International Gamer Guild had too many people at the meetup, and so we split into two groups. I thought the game went really well. My players were great. I unfortunately only had two. Mm-hmm. I would have preferred more, only because that means you have three NPC crew members on the Montero that I kind of had to quasi-pilot while dealing with other stuff.
Right.
And yeah, I told the players, okay, their crew, you've been working with them for a long time, they're not automatons, so you can't, they might not do what you say, but I also, I'm not going to have them step up and do things because kind of the focus is going to be on the your two characters.
What two characters did they play?
They picked Miller and Rye.
So we
had a captain and the technician.
Right.
Which, spoilers, it worked out well, but they compared agendas at the end, and both of those characters, their main thrust was financial. So not the characters didn't like overlap, but their agendas were fairly compatible.
Right.
So there wasn't a lot of inter-party conflict, which was fine.
And how did they handle the?
Everybody lived. Everybody survived.
Oh,
like,
nice. Pretty,
like, oh, except for like the end. Yeah, one of the NPC crew members got eaten. and a lot of the Kronos members got eaten.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, again, spoilers, this is the second group where when the Kronos crew members wake up in cryo, everyone books it to the cryo room and just goes, nope, and locks them into the cryo bay. So when that bloodburster pops out of one of them, I'm just like, well, it's buffet time because here's a bunch of NPCs in a locked room with a voracious monster. So there was a really great moment because this group decided to try and fix the air filters.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Which no one has ever done before. Because they also went to the reactor room and said, oh, there's a monster in here, escaped it, and then just shut the door and said, well, we're not dealing with that. When they tried to fix the air filters, there was a very high chance of them getting like electrocuted when they're working next to these coils. So they had the great idea of, let's turn off the power while we work on these things, which was completely safe and a great idea, except right when they turned off the power, and I couldn't have planned this better, one of the other PCs was trying to deal with the bloodburster in the cryo room and was like, shut the door. Sorry, power's off. Door doesn't shut. So
nice.
Like they timed that really well, and I was really happy with that.
Oh, that's cool.
That was pretty cool.
Nice. Excellent. What's good? And you were saying that the book, so they printed Chariot of the Gods in a separate booklet for their final release as opposed to the PDF, and there's some layout differences.
Yeah, there's some layout differences. I would have to go through it again, as you said, it looks like the organization and presentation in the book that came with the core book for Chariot of the Gods is better. I got tripped up because things were not in the same location from running the PDF where I was. So I'd be like, okay, hold on. Let me find the stats for the Abomination. Oh, they didn't say that. And I'm like, it's not there. Okay, flip.
Right.
So, yeah. I also didn't use the GM screen only because space was so limited. I stood up the entire time.
Oh, wow.
Which was fine.
Yeah,
and then after I got home after about like 5 hours, I'm like, oh, man, why am I this killing me? Oh, right, because I was standing up for 5 hours.
Wow.
Yeah. My voice was also shot because there was a 10-person D&D game happening in the same room.
Jeez.
Yeah, I was basically having to... Real difficult to maintain a kind of like dread atmosphere, but I tried.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Yeah. That does seem like incompatible sessions.
Yeah, really. Really.
Wow. 10 people.
Yeah. There were 10 people sitting around the table, and I bet they got to like the third round of combat.
Yeah, right, right.
Meanwhile, my players had explored a whole ship. Yeah, that's something else that the players did. I think this is the first time anyone went down to D-Deck. Vehicle bay, because it made sense for like the new air filtration scrubber stuff to be down there. And they're like, well, okay, off we go down to D-Deck. And again, I had to ask, okay, is anyone moving quietly? And again, like you always have to ask that question. And my players, to their credit, went, we really want to, but there is no reason for our characters to know that. So we go. I'm like, okay. Yeah.
That is hard to maintain.
Yeah, yeah.
So speaking of two players, I'm going to be running as part of the starter series.
Oh, yeah.
Starter set series that we're doing, I'm going to run the Star Trek Adventures series. So that's going to be two players. And there is, so it's a similar setup where the starter adventure is you're going onto a kind of derelict adrift ship. And so I'm going to be curious to see if I can slow and quiet down away team, and because you've got in this situation, you've got no communication.
Oh, really?
And it's a very similar situation. It's everything's on auxiliary power, and you're like, why did this happen? What's going on? So we'll see. We'll see if I can keep things a little more mysterious.
Like, I am not a big Star Trek fan. I don't mean I dislike it. I'm just kind of not that interested in it. But it kind of seems to me like Star Trek might be more about the mystery rather than some kind of evil antagonist, apart from like the Borg or whatever weird three-legged alien species was in Voyager that supposedly could combat the Borg. Where I'm like, this is dumb. But anyway, like apart from that, don't really know if anything spooky would be on the ship. But hey, I haven't played the adventure, so I'll be curious to find out.
Yeah, and it's a lot. The system itself, it's a 2D20 system, and it's very tuned to kind of figuring things out. So the Starter Adventure's got a lot of little puzzles and things to figure out, like, you know, how do you get this door open, or why is this like this? I like that about it, and I think I hope it'll be fun. And I'm really impressed because it is a learning starting adventure, and they basically say this is for a new GM.
Okay, cool.
And so I played the 2D20 system a few times. I've run it a few times before, so I know that system. So I really was pleased with how they laid it out, and it just kind of, you know, concepts build on each other.
Right.
And they say, you know, now do this, now do this. The only thing that they don't do in the starting adventure, and I guess because it does overcomplicate things, is this Star Trek adventure system is heavy in social conflict. So negotiating doing things socially, and anytime you take a lethal action, you actually generate threat for the GM. So anytime you say, okay, phasers are not on stun, you know, we're going lethal,
okay,
you're giving the GM all the reinforcements and conflict and everything, complications that he or she wants to throw at you, because you are just generating threat. So phasers on stun is the only way to kind of approach, is it the you know, default way to approach any situation.
I haven't looked at the mechanics for that, but from what you've explained, I like that. Because my feeling is that Star Trek is about violence as the last resort.
Right.
And I like how that is mechanically supported by saying, okay, as soon as you start getting ready to kill people, you're giving the GM mechanical currency for them to spend. So think real hard before you do that. I like that. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, that was a nice thing when we did the review of the core book. That was the thing that I think that's the flavor, because you don't want to, they kind of, with the next generation movies and stuff, they turned them into kind of action adventure.
And
the new Star Trek, the kind of J.J. Abrams reboot is just like Spock punching. Yeah. So it's a little bit against that. But
but could he kill someone with those punches? It might not be lethal. Yeah.
Right. He's pulling them. And that'll be kind of a continuing thing, because we really want to take a look at how they're introducing these different systems and different settings to people. And the Star Trek box, it's got counters, it's got dice, it's got maps. Only thing it doesn't have is a screen, but it's it's a really complete set as far as like open the box and let's start playing, because it's, you know, pre-gen characters. Like with most of the starter sets, pre-gen, and then there's no character creation rules. Right. So buy the core book if you want to make your own character.
Well, I mean, that's fine and kind of to be expected.
And you have to you have to kind of decide what you're going to cut from that opening experience. Like they cut the social conflict.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, there's no social conflict in this opening adventure. I thought that was a key part of it, but I think for people that are coming from D&D or another kind of combat heavy system, they're talking?
or pony up those threat tokens.
Stack them up.
Speaking of two players,
yes,
I'm going to try and enter another game jam.
Oh, nice.
Because I found out there is a game jam called Just the Two of Us, specifically designed for two-player games.
Oh, that's cool.
It's on itch.io, sponsored by Speak the Sky. Mm-hmm. That's the person's name. And it runs until like February 18th.
Mm.
And can you guess what I'm going to do? It's me, so that answer is probably not that hard.
I'm guessing... teen romance?
Oh, well, close enough. Yeah. Like, people have asked for it more than one. Mm. I'm going to try and turn Hunger and Thirst into an actual two-player game where you play both sides of the role.
Oh, nice. Yeah, yeah. Oh, that's great. Yeah, good idea.
Came up with, like, a card mechanic for it, but then realized it didn't really fit because the focus kind of got taken away from these are prompts that you then write.
Mm.
And, like, the game, the stuff I came up with was very... action-y, and I felt didn't leave space to then write stuff. So I think what this game is literally going to be is like two players writing this thing out together, almost where you like have to pass the things back and forth. Or for advanced play, you just tell your partner what you're going to say.
Right.
That's like super hardcore mode where I was talking with kind of Jamie online. I'm like, okay, am I writing a game here or am I writing like a foreplay manual? I don't know. So I'm like possibly the same thing.
Right. Yeah. Rules for excitement.
Exactly.
Yeah. I like the idea of passing kind of like Exquisite Corpse style. You're like creating the story. Like, I don't know how you're going to react to this, but this is what I do.
And I think that's what it's going to be. It's going to be like vampires got to start, write something, and then, okay, pass the moral and then kind of react to it. Yeah, yeah.
Excellent. So. Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing that. That's great. Yeah, so keep us updated kind of what you went through to get that system
to work. If I time it really well, I'll be able to release it on the 14th of next month.
Oh, whoa, look at that. Always got that marketing angle. Yep. Perfect. One thing that I noticed, speaking of Modiphius, the creators of the Star Trek Adventures, they teamed up with Arkane Studios, and they're going to do, it's odd, it rarely goes this direction.
Mm-hmm.
They are going to take a video game and turn it into an RPG. So a video game setting and make a tabletop RPG.
That's not unheard of, but okay. Yeah.
No, it's done, but it seems like, I don't know, I guess recently there's been a lot of back and forth because a lot of people, I've noticed a lot of independent stuff, people are using inspiration from video games and video game mechanics. So they're just going to completely go all in and take, and Dishonored, it's had two installments. I think
Dishonored,
and so it's kind of that, it's an assassin kind of based steampunk world. I don't know how well the game, I know the game, the characters are interesting and compelling in the game, but I don't know how well the world is fleshed out as far as like the lore and why things are the way they are. But they're going to do the same kind of treatment that they've done with previous properties. There's going to be a chaos mechanic. And there's also going to be the powers of the void. So that'll be something they have to build in. And of course, it's going to be 2d20 because it's a Modiphius
property. Yeah, I saw that. I know nothing about Dishonored other than the fact that it is a video game. I saw someone say, hey, it's a d20 and was going to make a real snarky joke about d20. And then I thankfully did my research and said, oh, it's Modiphius and there's 2d20. Right. So that's a lot better and I won't say anything.
So that'll be coming out soon because they just did a press release. So second quarter of 2020. So yeah, we should win the next. Couple of months be getting close to the release of
I wonder
that.
If that works or not necessarily works, but I wonder if that's a way to attract more people to the hobby. Hey, you love this video game. Mm-hmm. Here's a tabletop game based on it. So why not give it a try?
Right. You know, I think board game people have been experimenting with that too, because we're seeing a lot of video games that are popular turned into board games. Mm-hmm. And sometimes the mechanics do and don't translate that well. It's a little bit frustrating.
Because the only board game I've played years ago and have since sold the game disappointingly, was StarCraft. StarCraft board game put out by FFG. And the mechanics are completely different from the video game, but captured the game. I felt captured the game so well that I was so impressed with it that I bought it off Lyle because he was the person who had it first. And I'm I love how this kind of replicates the same feel. But it was one of those giant boxes that I had no space for.
It
didn't take as long as Twilight Imperium 3 to set up or as long to play, but it was still like a commitment kind of that I couldn't commit to anymore. And so it just ended up saying, okay, anyone want this? But yeah.
Wow.
I was real disappointed that one of my hydralisks was missing a head.
Oh, no. And all the Korean players were so good at it, right?
I didn't say that.
No, that's famously, StarCraft is the national game of South Korea. Right. Okay, so where can people find you?
On Twitter, as always. Just look for the massive threads. That's nothing but GIFs. Right. That's Hivemind, HYVEMYND.
Excellent. Are you going to post any updates about how it's going, how the game jam is going? Or
oh, I've already been posting
about that. Good.
As well as a whole host of other ideas I had for solo RPGs.
Oh, nice. All right. And if you'd like to get in touch with Idle Red Hands, idleredhands.com is the website, and follow us on Twitter at Idle Red Hands. There's a YouTube and a Twitch channel as well, and you may see a live stream this week for the Star Trek. Yeah, Star Trek
Set
Starters.
Phasers to fun.
Okay, that's the title of the stream. And also, I do a weekly single panel gag cartoon. So abusecartoons.com is the website for that. And you can find me on, of course, Twitch and YouTube. That's happening Sunday nights in North America. And you can also read the archive at gocomics.com/domesticabuse. So that's it for this week. We'll be back next week.
Later, mortals.
Bye.